My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Here we go!
You're listening to the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 98 of the Emerald Flow Show. We're a podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. And I'm just going to cut straight to the chase. This is the third time that I'm recording this show. I had technical difficulties my first two times. And it's Gerard here, and I'm flying solo this week. Paul's in Japan, of course, enjoying all of that, and he will have a debrief for you, and I think he'll probably record be on an episode of Wrestling Omakase with John Carroll, because they're both in Japan. And I normally like to get a guest, but I'm in the middle of moving right now to a new place with my wife, so scheduling all of that is just a hassle, so I'm going to do a quick episode here solo of all of the lots of events that have occurred, basically from the end of the year to now. I'm recording on Saturday, the morning of Saturday, January 10th. So some of the previews might have already happened that I'll get to later by the time you listen to this. So let's just dive right in. We'll go all the way back to December 21st. DDT had their final Cork and Hall show of the year, ring finale 2025, curtain call where everyone is a star. And of course, I'm not going to watch a whole DDT undercard, but what you should watch is, in a special tag match, Hiroshima and Kaisi Takechi defeated Yuji Nagata and Sanshiro Takagi at 9:27 with a swan dive forearm from Takechi on Takagi. This was great for what it was. I thought Nagata worked really hard here, and he had some fun exchanges with Takechi, and Takagi worked hard too. And so the old guy's working hard. Of course, Hiroshima's still pretty darn good for his age. So it was all about making Takeuchi look like a star, especially going into his appearance at the Tokyo Dome for Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th, and they did the job here. So that was a lot of fun and worth checking out. Also, I quite enjoyed the KOD tag team title Mao and Cannon with Kimihiro defeating Jun Masaoka and Gaia Hawks in 1240 when Cannon pinned Hawks with a modified Lonely Desires. Good solid tag team match, and I really like the sort of contrast of Mao and Cannon, you know, crazy Mao and the powerhouse Cannon. You know, so that's worth a watch. And then, of course, the main event for the KOD Openweight title, Yuki Ueno defeated Takashi Masada in 21-39 with a WR. This was, to me, the match of the show. I'd go about 4 stars on this. A great showing from Masada, and I believe this is his first KOD Openweight title challenge. Yuki Ueno, one of the best in the world, obviously leading him through this. So just great. And I thought they built to, a strong finish where Masada got some chances, but Ueno sort of put him away in a way that said, you know, you still have a bit of a ways to go, young guy. But, I think Masada is developing nicely and will be ready to be a star because they want to make him a star, clearly. Not quite there, but almost there. So that was a solid sort of end for DDT's 2025. We'll hop over to great very quickly. The undercard of this show was it was what it was. There's a couple things on there I enjoyed, like Sumo Watanabe and So Daimanji defeating Kuroshio Tokyo Japan and Sego Tachibana in 1918 with the Frankensteiner from Watanabe on Tachibana night. That was a nice little match. I actually enjoyed the Evolution Strong Women's title skirmish with Michiko and Yuna Manase defeating Chi-Chi and Zones in 648 with the Hito Danashi driver from Michiko and Chi-Chi. That was building up their match. And I'll get to that in a second. And then I enjoyed also for the Ledet UWF title match, Katsuhiko Nakajima defeated Ryo Itaka in 1250 with a sleeper hold. Solid enough, you know, won't knock your socks off or anything, but I've generally enjoyed, honestly, most of Nakajima's great work, even if it maybe doesn't hit as high as what you would expect, you know, him usually doing. And in the G-Rush title, versus Kitaro Suzuki went to a time limit draw in 7 minutes. They restarted it, and then Tanaka beat one in another minute and 50 seconds with the Grand Cobra to make a second defense of the title. I know these guys are older, but they're still pretty good. But I thought this was disappointing, especially with the silly time limits. Like, this is a WWE speed title, basically. And for the G-Rex title, Al Lindemann defeated TJP in 24-14 with the German suplex hold to make his second defense of the title. This was really good. I'd go about 4 stars on this. TJP, whatever you think of him, is a great, solid wrestler. You know, technically sound, and that was the case here. Really good technical work building up to some big suplexes in the closing stretch there, and I quite enjoyed it. So that's worth checking out because the great paywall has come down. So you can watch all this stuff on YouTube now for free. What that means for the company, who knows? Because, of course, Shima and actually also Ryo Itaka have left as of December 31st. Shima also vacated the G Infinity titles because of an quote unquote injury, if you believe that or whatever, because his arm, he's claimed an arm injury. So I don't know. Still on my great death watch, I suppose. Also, I will just add, with that Evolution Strong build on January 7th, at Shinkiba, of course, they ran the Chi-Chi versus Michiko title match. Chi-Chi won, which was clearly the whole build and what they were trying to do. And that is actually worth watching. I thought that was a very good match. Chi-Chi has become a very good worker. And I thought Michiko is actually a really great heel. That was the highlight of that match. Goes about 17 minutes. I'd go 3.75 on it. Maybe if you're feeling generous, 4 stars. Maybe not quite. We'll say 3.75. But that's also worth checking out if you can see it. Absolutely. And then before we get to the usual two of Noah and All Japan, just one more show. And that's from Big Japan on December 21st in Osaka at 176 box or 176 box or however it is. Maybe you pronounce the numbers in Japanese. I don't know. They claim 410 fans, which was a super no vacancy for that building, which at this point is actually not a bad attendance for Big Japan, in all honesty. And really, I only watched on this show the strong heavyweight title match. So DiMaggio defeated Yasufumi Nakanoi in 1906 with a black ring. That was another solid, good, hard-hitting smash mouth DiMaggio match. Nakanoi is a good opponent for him. You know, a pretty solid, though a little unspectacular, but still, like, you know, Nakanoi working on the leg and just good hard-hitting work. And I enjoyed the finish with all of those attempted black reigns from DiMaggio. So I'd go about 3 3/4 on that one as well. But, you know, it is the highlight of Big Japan. And I really think DiMaggio is one of the best guys that's not in sort of one of the quote-unquote Big Three or Legacy Three men's promotions in Japan right now. Big fan of, especially of what he brings to the table and his style. So then we will jump into Noah Thanksgiving 2025 on December 23rd at Corican Hall in front of 1,498 fans, which is pretty good for them for a match that doesn't have in Corican these days, with a match that's not for the GHC title. Although it's the annual end of year show for Noah, so you have to take that into account. So what we had was Will Cruz, Alejandro, and Kai Fujimura defeating Saxon Huxley, Tsuji Kano, and Eda in 753 with a frog splash from Cruz on Eda. It was a fun visual and everything like that. You know, good enough opener to build also for Cruz and Huxley. That would come on January 1st. Then Tadasuke and Jun Masaoka defeated Atsushi Kotoge and Hajime Ohara in 455 with the crucifix hold from Tadasuke on Kotoge. Poor Kotoge. This was just to establish that Team 2000X were just those dastardly heels. And then there was a Noah Full Gift Battle Royal that Kazuyuki Fujita won. Again, this went 9:34, and it was what it was. You know, nothing to write home about. These battle royals are all the same in Japan. But then we had Naomichi Marufuji and Kenno defeating Hiroto Tsuruya and Midori Takahashi in 752 with the Kenno special from Kenno on Takahashi. And this was a ton of fun because it was just the grumpy and surly veterans beating up the young boys. It's all you want from your wrestling. Good, solid work. And then Hiromu Takahashi and Daiki Nagai defeated Amasuka and Daiki Odoshima in 1058 with the time bomb from Takahashi and Amasuka. And this was a good, solid outing. The classic sort of, you know, outsider and interpromotional, like veteran and young guy versus veteran and young guy from another company. I love those vibes. And so this was a good build. And then we got to the Godfather 25 Years of Greatness, Takashi Sugera defeating Kenta in 1649 with the Olympic Slam. And this was also, this was Sugera's 25th anniversary match and technically sort of the end of Noah's 25th anniversary celebrations, which I really feel like they didn't lean into as much as they should have or could have. There could be a number of reasons for that. Obviously, Misawa looms large over the first, you know, 9-10 years of the company. And then, of course, from about that same, that was Misawa era, was all the, you know, NTV owns all that footage, so you don't have access to all that footage. But whatever it was, I didn't feel like that. Maybe they're trying to, you know, blaze a new identity for themselves and everything like that. So maybe that's why they didn't really lean into it as much. Although it makes me feel old because I remember when Sugera did debut with a lot of hype. So, you know, the years go by. But this was up to a certain point, pretty what I would expect. You know, it started a little slow, but then they just walloped each other like you would hope these two would. But then, of course, you know, the Team 2000X stuff just took over. Like at one point, they teased Sugera using a chair, but he threw it away, and that got a big pop from the crowd. But then Sugera then did just cheated to win, and it just felt like it pissed all over what should have been a celebration of this of Sugera and the company for the past 25 years. So, you know, spoiler alert, I'm just going to bury Team 2000X for the rest of this show while I'm covering Noah. And in the Ultimate Showcase 2025 main event, returning to the ring after injury, Ozawa, Masa Kitamiya, and Tadasuke defeated Yoshiki Inamura, Kaito Kiyomiya, and Tetsuya Endo in 1813 with the real rebel from Ozawa on Endo. Again, started well, fell apart. Well, didn't the match didn't fall apart. Team 2000X interfered because it looked like Endo might win. But then, of course, guess what? They interfered and Endo got pinned. And it's just again and again and again and again and again. Yeah, you know. And, oh, I forgot to mention, after the Marufuji and Kenno match, Bushi came out to tease him and his very mysterious partner on January 1st and gave a misting to Kenno. I do have to say, though, the whole thing, if the whole idea was for it to be obviously Naito to piss off Kenno and make him angry, that is a funny and effective angle. And then on January 1st, Noah, the new year 2026 at Tokyo Nippon Budokan in front of 6,278 fans. That is a good number for them, but I can't help but think that that was Naito drawing that number. Let's be honest here, but it is above last year, although it's below, obviously, Nakamura versus the Great Muta, but, you know, I wouldn't expect that to be surpassed by this show, but it's still respectable. But the question is, can Noah sustain this? And I really don't know. And we'll talk about that more in a second. To open the show, we had the GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Title 3-Way match. Daga and Daiki Otoshima defeated Alejandro, Kai Fujimura, and then Ada and Shuji Kondo. Sorry, I'm confused with all of these names of this format here. And 743 with the dead end from Otoshima on Alejandro to make their second defense of the title. Look, it was good for what it was, but it was only 743, so you can't write home about it. And it certainly deserves more, even if, you know, obviously I do not like 3 and 4 ways, but that doesn't mean I cannot enjoy them if they get real good. And, you know, I think that this could have been good if it had gotten more time. And then Black New Year, Masa Kitamiya, Takashi Sugera, Tadasuke, and Jun Masaoka defeated Kazuyuki Fujita, Minoru Suzuki, Shuhei Taniguchi, and Junta Miyawaki in 648 with the Stranglehold Gamma from Kitamiya on Miyawaki. And just what you would expect for a quick match, just to make it look like Kitamiya continues to be a badass. Now in the Progress Atlas title, Saxon Huckley defeated Will Cruz in 807 with the neck hanging bomb to win the title. This is a lot of fun and perfectly what it needed to be for 8 minutes. I've seen some people say that this match should have ended after Cruz managed to hit a top rope Spanish fly on Huxley, which was a legitimately incredible sight to behold. But look, these are two crazy guys just going up there and throwing bombs. Why not throw some more bombs? Because Huxley then would also kick out of a sit-out powerbomb from Cruz, which other people said maybe that should have been the finish. But you know what? Huxley won. It was the most fun I've ever had watching Saxon Huxley and Noah. Will Cruz hopefully will be returning. I think I heard rumors that WWE might have had his eye on him or whatever, but I hope Noah keeps using him until they do sign him. So that was a lot of fun. It would not also shock me if they change the title back at some point, you know, in January or February, back to Cruz or anything like that. But just a ton of fun and what this show needed. And then Break the Silence, Kenta Uka Sasaki, Tetsuya Endo, and Hayata defeated Atsushi Kotoge, Muhammad Yone, Hajime Ohara, and Hiroki in 6:53 with the go to sleep from Kenta on Hiroki. And this was just to get over Kenta's new faction, which is the White Raven squad of those four guys. Interesting question is, who's the pin eater? Is Hayata the pin eater? Because he's the only junior in the thing, or he's a de facto heavyweight or whatever he is, who's to say? They don't really use Hayata in that role, so it'll be interesting to go, because as we'll talk about in a second, one of the members of White Raven squad will be gone for a bit, but we'll get into that more later. And then for the GHC national title, Alpha Wolf defeated Dragon Bane in 13:17 with the Wolf Driver for a failed first defense from Bane, and Alpha Wolf is the 19th national GHC national champion. So this was an interesting match in terms of what the ups and downs of it. So it started off and they wanted to do the melodramatic, this is brother versus brother, which is whatever. I'm not a big fan of it. So they got out of the way and it started building up to be something decent. Maybe not quite what you'd expect from these two, but it was building to something. But then the interference from Team 2000X starts, and this just falls off a cliff. And of course, Wolf cheats to win, joins Team 2000X, and beats his brother, turns on his brother, and everything like that. And that's just a big wet fart of a finish. And the crowd booing almost sound like it's not heel heat, but it's like, what is this stupid shit? Who's to say for sure? So that really just was like the first sign that this show was on shaky ground, right? Now, there would be some other ups, but there'd also be some other downs over the course of the rest of the show. So next up, we had a special tag match, Invasion. Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows defeated Kaito Kiyomi and Jack Morris in 11:50 when Anderson pinned Morris after a magic killer. I guess maybe, do I have to take an owl? Because my God, did the good brothers, especially Carl Anderson, but even Luke Gallows worked hard and took some bumps. Gallows took more bumps than you'd think. Kiyomiya and Jack Morris were willing to bump all over the place for these guys. So this was a good match. Anderson shows that he can still be a good worker. The question is, can they keep it up? That is my concern and that sort of thing. You know, 3, 4, 5 months from now, because they're coming back, it seems. Will I be complaining? Maybe I will. So I'm not going to take an L yet. I'm going to be cautious and keep them at arm's length because of their history. And, you know, once they have established themselves, they may start to, you know, realize that they're going to have a date after the next date and then after the next date and maybe not work as hard. So, but look, they deserve all the credit for coming in to a new company and working hard. No question about that. For the GHC tag team title, Tetsuya Naito and Bushi defeated Naomichi Marufuji and Kenno in 13-16 with the inside cradle from Bushi on Marufuji. My God. Once again, another V0 defense for these tag titles, which have had a lot in the last few years. I don't know if Nosawa is still booking because Monday Magics have also, or at least the final say, because Monday Magic are now no longer affiliated to Noah. They're just their own thing under the Wrestle Cyber Fight banner. But a lot of the booking still seems to be very Nosawa influenced, including all of the V0 tag title defenses. And my God, Naito looks rough. He looks like the time off has not served him well. I mean, I know he did a few international dates and the like, but gained a little weight. You know, can he even work out? I thought he said he was still going to go get stem cells. I don't know. Maybe his knees are too far gone for stem cells or whatever, or he didn't get it. But I don't know how long he can do this. And the thing is, like, much like with another famous wrestler with no knees, Keiji Muto, he was a few years younger, but not that young, because he would have been 39 in 2001. Muto was savvy enough to change up his style, brought in the Shining Wizard and everything like that to make up for what he lost in other elements of his explosiveness and high flying and everything like that. Naito never really did that beyond maybe sort of those elbows to the neck. And of course, the Destino remains his finisher in like every match. And he just is very likely to botch it or just not look good. So, you know, I don't know if it's too late for Naito to change up his style. So the question is, how long will the fans accept him at this degraded style, given his how explosive and that was, right? Because with somebody like Hiroshi Tanahashi, obviously Tanahashi was a great athlete and was, you know, could be explosive in his own ways, even if he wasn't like doing crazy dives or landing on his neck and stuff like that. He evidenced a sort of canniness in the ring that Naito never really had. I think Naito was an amazing worker. I always thought he was, if you took the sort of Okada, Tanahashi, that triumvirate of New Japan in the 2010s, you know, I think he was the, and if you even wanted to throw someone like Ibushi in there, you know, Naito was always the one that was the most inconsistent. He could have underwhelming matches. He could, even when he was in much better health, he had his botches from trying to do ambitious things in the ring and so like that. So for him to break down like this, it's just even more glaring in my mind than a Tanahashi, who can use his sort of like ring cunning to actually have good matches, right? And I'm not just talking about, obviously, he was going to pull it all out for that final match against Okada, but just all of the matches that Tanahashi had along the way this year showed what he could do with even his body broken down in the way it was, in a way that Naito simply cannot. So we're going to have to be dealing with this. Now, of course, I don't expect Naito to be working the house show loop. He's not going to be working Yokohama Radiant Hall or anything like that, but it'll be interesting to see. You know, maybe his performance here will snap him up into something in terms of working out or finding some other treatments for his ailments to get him through all of this, but it's not looking good. But obviously their title holders, Naito is a draw, evidenced by this number. So he's coming back, folks, you know, one way or another. And of course, you know, rumors abound. Evil's interested in leaving. Sanada has taken an indefinite leave of absence and he may not return from reports. Though, you know, that's, so the question is LIJ just going to reform in Noah? And I would say, I think that's a bad idea, because then you're just doing has runs. You know, out of all those guys, the one that I would still say, and this would be funny for me to say, given how much I just dislike him or what he became in House of Torture, but I think there's still something with Evil if you stripped away the gimmick and just turn, even just brought back Evil to what he was before, before House of Torture, like a hard, rough Smash Mouth wrestler, I think there's something still there you could get out of it. Sonata is Sonata. Now, I'm a bit of a Sonata defender, but the thing, to an extent, no, whether or not he should have gotten as long an IWGP world title run as he should have, no, absolutely not. But the thing is, I think Sonata, it was one of his arms. He never took time off to heal, so then that's the thing. So this is all, this just comes together. It's like, to me, if Evil drops the stupid House of Torture gimmick, if he leaves, and maybe even the Evil gimmick, because who knows, that could be owned by New Japan. I think there's something there, but these everyone else who in the sort of the classic lineup of LIJ, I think is a lot of diminishing returns. And right. Well, I mean, it's Shingo left, obviously, but I don't think Shingo's leaving New Japan or anything like that. So yeah, that's sort of how would I feel about that. But I would assume that if they all left, if Evil and Sonata left New Japan, Noah would be their top destination. Would Evil go to WWE? I don't know. Is he still in a relationship with Io Shirai? I don't even know that. And of course, Tony Khan won't touch him. And, you know, fair enough. And Sonata's, I think, just he's got the injury and everything, and he didn't like the world on fire when he was the top guy. So, like, that's not going to help him get a job in the States. So, to me, it would all be freelancing plus, you know, freelancing, you know, into Europe, obviously, into like other places in Southeast Asia, you know, doing shows in Malaysia and Hong Kong, or you know, that sort of thing, Vietnam. So that would be the future for those guys. So, but again, getting back to Noah specifically, it would just be diminishing returns because, hey, you've brought in all of these guys, despite the fact, and we'll get into this in a minute, Noah has also brought in another young guy from outside that they can invest in. They had the three rookies debut. They've made new champions in 2025 with both Ozawa and Inamura. And Ozawa maybe did not spike business as much as I think some people may think, but he definitely did. Inamura, we'll get into Inamura in a minute, but I don't think he's been a disaster or anything. And I think he does actually have some fans and everything like that. So that's a positive thing. So you don't have to retread 2010's New Japan in Noah in 2026. Now over halfway past the 2020 decade, you don't have to go back to 2016, 2017 now. I think it's just a bad idea, especially when you have finally a young person movement going on in Noah. So that's my 2 cents on that. For the GHC junior heavyweight title, Amasuka defeated Hiromu Takahashi in 14-24 with the Kaihu. Hiromu fails on his third defense, and Amasuka is the 60th GHC junior heavyweight champion. Match of the show, 4.25, just great. You know, you would think that also that Hiromu Takahashi, given how hard he works outside of New Japan compared to when he's in New Japan, may want to leave too. I haven't heard anything about that, but it's abundantly clear now, especially the Noah run proves it, because I believe was it 2024 first half that Hiromu looked better than he had in a number of years, and he looked great in this run in Noah. So it's like, yes, he's had some serious injuries, including breaking his neck, but it's abundantly clear now that he can still go at a high level. It's just, does he want to? And he wanted to in Noah. He wanted to help make his friend Amasuka. And so, you know, now Hiromu, the thing is, I didn't bring up Hiromu when I just talked about the LIJ reunion, because there were no rumors or anything swirling about him. But if he did leave New Japan, that's a different story compared to some of those other guys like Sonata. And for Amasuka, hopefully this is his big moment, because his past title reigns, I feel, got shortchanged. He should be the junior ace. And, you know, Daiki Otoshima came out to challenge him. And that'll be the next challenge actually tomorrow on January 11th. So it may have happened by the time you hear this, but let me tell you, I think obviously Amasuka is going to retain. And I think, you know, you get the Otoshima title challenge over done now January. And really, I think you just keep it, this title on Amasuka for the rest of the year, maybe 6 months, maybe all the way back to the next Noah, the new year. And then you just have Otoshima beat him for again and just tell the story of Otoshima, you know, building himself up over 2026 to after losing the first time to finally take it. Because in this junior division, with this transition, you know, okay, the Rattel guys, you know, Hayata may even be a de facto heavyweight now in White Raven squad. It is time. You've got some rookies. It is time to go in this new direction. And we'll talk about passing over some of the other guys in a minute. it is time to go on. You know, Odeshima, after Amatsuka gets a nice signature title reign that he so greatly deserves with this title, and then you move it to the new generation that's coming up later this year or early next. So that was how I would approach things with that title. And in the main event for the GHC Heavyweight Championship, Yoshiki Inamura defeated Ozawa in 21-18 with the discharge to make a second defense. I mean, this sort of encapsulates everything that's wrong with Noah because, hey, guess what? Team 2000X got involved, although it wasn't enough to put down Inamura. I thought there was some solid work in this match early on. Other people think it was boring from the whole way. I don't know. I think a lot of people don't like the Inamura gimmick. And I get it. It's not great, but I think some people are very, very, very hostile to the gimmick with the weird promos that are in half English, half Japanese and everything like that. And the sort of NXT influence. And I get that. I just can't bother me because guess what? Other than this match and even up before the interference, I have enjoyed Inamura's in-ring work. I enjoyed his title win against Kenta. I enjoyed his defense against Kiyomiya. You know, he is a very, very good worker. I've enjoyed him a lot, and I've always been a fan of him, so I want him to succeed. But yes, the gimmick is limiting, but guess what? The Team 2000X pisses me off more than Mr. Smack Daddy gimmick. It simply does, and that is, to me, the heart and the biggest problem in pro wrestling Noah right now, and sort of broader, more broadly in Japan, whether it's House of Torture or Hate in Stardom. Like, just stop these dress in black heel units. It's annoying. It's destroying Noah. And the thing is, if you sort of think about this, and this was sort of Joe Lanza brought this up, out of the three companies, he was the most optimistic about New Japan, somewhat optimistic and or more optimistic about All Japan than he had been in a while, and pessimistic about Noah. I would absolutely agree with this fact. I think that New Japan put his best foot forward. New Japan actually seems to be serious about planning for the future now that Tanahashi is gone. Aaron Wolf was successful. Tsuji was made. They stuck the landing on everything on January 4th. There was only those three main things to do and a good follow-up on New Year's Dash. So they're in a good spot. One could critique certain things going on in All Japan, and we could get to them in a second. But overall, they did well for themselves, and they are building some things. Fine. In 2026 looks to be better than 2025, which obviously got hampered, I think, by just a far too long June Saito Triple Crown reign, although I'm not going to completely bury June Saito, as we'll get to in a minute, and everything like that. So there's those things going on for those companies. But this was just a repetitiveness. Leaning on old acts, even though the Good Brothers worked hard, I'll give them that. But then Naito's so broken down, and then you have Team 2000X running everywhere. The thing is, finally, Noah has an active dojo turning out what looks to be solid young talent. Deki Odeshima, incredible talent, just incredible. And you have, you know, look, I like Ozawa. I thought Ozawa was a bolt of fresh, like just a lightning bolt that helped this company. And it helped the company, even if the business is not as spiked as much as some people might think. But still, they made a star. Inamura. I think Inamura is over, and I think Inamura has his fans. Is he Ozawa? No. Is he even Kaido? Maybe not, but I don't think Inamura will go down as a disaster by any means, especially if he he's allowed to have good matches. Continue to have good matches, but we will see, because Masa Kidemi is his next challenger on the 11th, which might have happened while you hear that, by the time you've heard this. So again, that is a big issue, and that I think is going to just hurt him, no fault of his own. You know, just the stupid booking of this company, which, you know, I'm generally still convinced is mostly Nosawa, just with everything going on. So we move on to Noah's New Year reboot on January 2nd at Shinjuku Face in front of 468 fans. Shuhei Taniguchi at Tsushi Katoge and Hajime Ohara defeated Yuto Koyanagi, Hiroto Tsuruya, and Midoriya Takahashi in 538 with the Kumori Suri Otoshi from Kotoge on Koyanagi. Solid little opener with the young guys. And then Takashi Sugera, Tadasuke, and Jun Masaoka defeated Harutoki, Alejandro, and Kai Fujimura in 943 with the ambitions from Masaoka on Alejandro. Again, actually, this wasn't too bad for Team 2000X match. And then Kenta, Uko Sasaki, Tetsuya Endo, and Hayata defeated Jack Morris, Muhammad Yone, Ada, and Hiroki in 929 with a cross arm breaker from Sasaki and Hiroki. And this was just to give Sasaki a win because he's going on an excursion, which is a very interesting development. I didn't think they were going to send him on one because I don't know where this guy's going. He says to the USA, which is so fascinating. I think he'd be better off in Europe. But what's he going to do? He's going to be on NXT. He doesn't fit on NXT. You know, Inoue did okay for himself, but he had a weird, goofy personality. I don't think Sasaki has that. So I am completely baffled by that choice, but we'll see. But to me, if they're sending him to the USA, I think it's like you got to develop more of a personality, which I think is what is the idea of behind sending him to the States. But we shall see. But he's just going to be standing in the background of NXT, and presumably they'd have to pair him up with someone. I don't know. So with Charlie Dempsey or something, maybe. I don't know. So that's that. So what? Well, of course, we don't know for sure, but we'll see where he ends up. And then Noam Michimaru Fuji defeated Katsumi Inahata in 9:19 with a referee stop. And this was a good, solid, surly veteran versus young boy match again. And if you're wondering who Katsumi Inahata is, it is Fire Katsumi from JTO. So that's actually a very solid pickup. And so they're sort of moving him into a young boy position. And I think that that is good for him. That is good for the company. Again, all the more reason why, you know, Noah should be shifting in for the Young Guys Revolution instead of hanging on to these old wrestlers or, you know, these long in the tooth gimmicks, right? And then Kenno Daga and Deki Odoshima defeated Kaito Kiyomiya, Amasaka, and Junta Miyawaki in 11:13 with the Japanese leg roll clutch hold from Daga on Miyawaki. I actually thought this was a pretty solid match, but this also has some significance because this is sort of Junta Miyawaki's farewell match for now, because I think it was the next day on the 3rd or 4th, he popped up in DDT and is sort of doing the reverse endo where DDT will now be his main base for a while, but without formally transferring, but it could be a soft jump. Look, I've been a Junta defender and someone that thought it was his time to basically lead the junior division, but look, not the worst choice for him. I think he can do okay in DDT. I think he can build a crowd connection there. He built a bit of a crowd connection in Noah, I thought too. But his generation, because he's been active, I think, 7 or 8 years now and never got very far. So it's time to skip over his generation and just go to Odoshima, I think, at this point, especially with him like leaving, at least for this year or for the foreseeable future. Who knows if he'll return? So it's time to skip over that generation. And when Amasaka's gotten a good, and I want Amasaka to get a nice long reign, but then it's time to jump over the Miyawaki generation and go to Odoshima, who's the future of the junior division. Then next up, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows defeated Manabu Soya and Saxon Huxley in 10:32 when Anderson hit Soya with them after the magic killer. Not bad again. I don't think it was as good as the thing on the day before, but the Good Brothers, and I don't think they worked quite as hard as they did there, but still, you know, they haven't pissed me off yet, but we'll see how long this continues. I don't think I'm being unfair by saying that to them either. We have years and years of evidence on this. So I think my skepticism is warranted, even though they did exceed everybody's expectations, which was funny because then you've got the inevitable articles. Why are you calling them like a great? It's like, no, we're simply saying that they were, you know, people thought they were being too overhyped for what they did on Noah the New Year. And I don't think so. I think everybody identified that they were doing quite well and did quite well for themselves on that show. So there was no sort of overhyping them. From my perspective and everything like that. And then in the main event of the show, Ozawa, Masa Kidemi, and Alpha Wolf defeated Yoshiki Inamura, Will Cruz, and Dragon Bane in 1841 with a diving senton from Kidemi on Bane. Again, I thought this was solid up until, you know, who interfered. In the end, just this pale, this dark cloud that hangs over the promotion. So this will have happened by the time you probably listen to this, but Cork and Hall on the 11th, January 11th. You got Uko Sasaki versus Kenta in the farewell match. And then Amasaka versus Deki Odoshima and Yoshiki Nomura versus Masa Kidemiya. That actually looks pretty good in a vacuum, but that main event could not be good. Let's be honest here. But I'm very looking forward to Amasaka versus Deki. And just quickly before we go into All Japan, I forgot to mention when we were talking briefly about Big Japan that Yuya Aoki announced that he would be going freelance either, I believe, at the beginning of February or the beginning of March. It's another blow to Big Japan because he was sort of like the one sort of guy, younger-ish guy. I think he's in his early 30s now, but youngerish guy that they made in the last couple of years as Sekimoto and Okabayashi were winding down. And of course, I mean, I don't know if Okabayashi's ever coming back. And Sekimoto is also freelance. Takuya Nomura is also freelance, but of course, nursing some kidney issues and continue to get well soon. And best wishes to him. I want to see him return. So it was like Aoki, right? But and he seemed to spin his wheels a bit after he lost the title, despite the hot win when he beat Okabayashi for it, because then they went back to like Daichi Hashimoto, and then of course now recently So Daimonji. And I really did enjoy the Aoki versus Daimonji match and everything like that. So another not good sign for Big Japan, one of their own homegrown talents, because Daimonji is an outsider. Where does he go? Well, I mean, he's close to Shinjiro Otani, it seems. He's a bit of almost like Otani influenced with a lot of his ring style, like the Katsugiri chop and everything like that. So he could go to, well, he worked the, I didn't get a chance to watch this, but he could go to the Tochigi. But does that mean that he could get into 0-1 easily? And is 0-1 just a 0-1 is smaller than Big Japan? I think that's fair to say. So does that, now Sekimoto, whose base of operations is now basically all Japan without signing a contract, and we'll talk about who did sign contracts in a minute, could Sekimoto get him into all Japan? Man, he'd be great in all Japan. I'd love him in all Japan. That would be a good guy to have in the mid card or even upper mid card. You could build him to a title defense, I think. Yeah, for a triple crown challenge, I mean. Right? So ideally, I think that would be his best landing spot if they'll take him. So that remains to be seen, or he could just bounce around on the indies. Noah, I don't think would take him. And they have a lot of guys. They have their own young guys who are younger than him. And then they have to pay the fees for the Good Brothers and Naito and possibly other ex-LIJ members. So I don't know. I don't know if where he would also slot in there. So I don't know about that. So All Japan seems like possible, but we shall see where he goes. And then we go to All Japan at New Year's Eve 2025 at Yoyogi National Stadium Gymnasium number 2 in front of 2,730 fans. It's a very good number. I think, though, that was helped obviously by the number of foreigners who traveled to Japan this year, really to see the Tanahashi retirement. So to start off the show, we had the PWF World Junior Heavyweight Title Skirmish, Kurama, Mr. Saito, Naruki Doi, Fuminori Abe, and Seiko Tachibana defeated Atsuki Aoyagi, Rising Hayato, Dan Tamer, and Ryo Inoue in 13:34 with the apparition from Kurama on Inoue. A solid enough opener. This was Kurama getting into the ring. I think he has a good drop kick. A mixed response. I would say not any booing, but they're not like all enthusiastic for him. And then the New Year's Eve Rumble 2025 that Dump Matsumoto won, it was what it was. Harkening back to the days of when Onita was a regular here a couple years ago. So you can skip that. Really the most skippable thing on the show. And then Hideki Suzuki and Yuko Miyamoto defeated Ryugi Hana and Shota Kofuji in 7:44 with a double arm suplex from Suzuki on Kofuji. Interesting placement of this match because, you know, it feels like an opener or a second match show on the match on the show. But again, I mean, solid. But it didn't last long enough for anything to tell. But, you know, the Kofuji versus Hideki stuff was the main point. And then the New Year's Eve Monster War special 6-man 3-way tag match. Zion, Odyssey, and Shotaro Shino defeated Hokuto Omori, Kuma Arashi, and Cyrus. And as well as Ren Ayabe, Talos, and Daisuke Sakamoto in 13:28 with a diving headbutt from Zion on Omori. Look, this was fun. The whole point was each team had its own monster. And, that was the point. And it didn't disappoint. It was a fun little match, like 3.5 stars. Come on. You know, it was actually better than I thought it was going to be. Although I didn't think it was going to be a disaster or anything, but it was fun. What can I say? And then Saito Brothers versus Havoc special singles match. Jun Saito defeated Go Shiozaki in 16:28 with the Dying Light. This was really good. If this was one of Jun Saito's Triple Crown title defenses and like they had the exact same match, people would have a much different opinion on that reign. I would put it up there with the Ryuki Honda and the Hideki Suzuki defenses. Just hard, exactly what you would think with Go, hard hitting in that. Some people are asking him, did Go get knocked out? Maybe he got knocked a little woozy, but that one spot people were pointing out where like Kohei Wada helped Shiozaki run the ropes. Yeah, that spot turned into, Shiozaki turning around and hitting a short arm lariat to a really, really, really great looking short arm lariat, by the way. So, you know, he was cognizant enough to do that sort of counter spot and everything like that. So who's to say what Go was trying there? But, you know, fine. Not if he, even if he was not loopy, not detract from the match that much. I thought it was just hard hitting wrestling and exactly what I thought it could have been. And it lived up to my expectations, and I was quite happy. And of course, as I've said before, I think there's something there as a singles worker from June, but he got boxed into, you're in the main event, you have to do this triple crown structured match that goes like 25 minutes with the build and everything like that. Whereas this was just, we're going to kick the shit out of each other. Perfect length, right? They forced June to go over 20 in some of those triple crown matches. This is 16 minutes is perfect for him and everything like that. So this was sort of like, well, you know, there's something there, but you have to allow June to do a different format when he's triple crown champion. Not that I would be rushing to put the triple crown title back on him, but if you ever did, it should be building around 16 minute matches like this, as opposed to what they had him do, where he was expected to wrestle over 20 minutes in a more traditional triple crown title match build. And then next up, in a very prominent spot for them for the semi-main event, prominent spot for these titles, I should say, on the semi-main event of their biggest show of the year, the All-Asia Tag Team titles, Yoshiki Kato and Ishin defeated Musashi and Seki Yoshioka in 23-21 with the Kadere Luna from Kato on Yoshioka. The champions fail on the third defense, and Kato and Ishin are the 128th All-Asia Tag Team champions, the longest, the oldest titles in Japan, not continuous. There was they were sort of inactive for a bit after JWA folded in, Baba reactivated them in All Japan, but still they're the oldest, dating back to the 1950s. This was a pretty good match. I go the third best match of the show, a little long in the middle there, but a strong closing stretch, absolutely, although punctuated by some interference from their stablemate Kai. Come on, Kai. I love you. I've defended you. And you come in here and you bring in more heel unit interference in All Japan. Not that All Japan has been immune, but the Voodoo Murders have been disbanded now for a couple of years. So don't bring that shit back. But it was a lot more, shall we say, subtle comparatively to what Team 2000X does. Not that I'm letting them completely off the hook for that, but, you know, obviously it wasn't that bad. But look, I thought they'd win these titles, and I think that this was the right choice beyond a shadow of a doubt, because these titles have obviously been held by outsiders several times before, leading to great stuff, like when Strong BJ held these titles, lots of fun. When, hey, going all the way back to Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki holding these titles, great. So, the original Hayabusa. Hey, bring in the new Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki for another All-Asia title run, tag title run. I would be totally in favor of that. So it will be exciting to see what they do, because I think there's a lot of great things and great matches that you could do with these guys. Absolutely, no question about that. So in the main event for Kento Miyahara for the Triple Crown, Kento Miyahara defeated Yuma Anzai in 28-37 with a shutdown German suplex hold to make his third defense of the title, Triple Crown. Fantastic. 4.75 stars, best All Japan match of the year, one of the best matches of the year. Did not expect anything less from these guys. They really, really brought out the aggressiveness that you don't see in a lot of Kento matches. Once they really got going in their feud, I think some of those Kento versus Zeus matches were this sort of like where you could see the animosity between the two instead of just wrestling matches, like, yeah, anger at each other, aggressiveness. Anzai was awesome here, you know, and they played it up where it looked like, hey, Anzai could get the win here. And they built into, once again, another dramatic, will he get the shutdown German up and over? And he did, and he won kind of won with it. Just fantastic. And look, I thought this match was so good that I didn't have an issue with Kento winning, because, I don't know, this was just amazing. It felt like, okay, Kento is the man, and as much as maybe, you know, you got to put it on Anzai, push Anzai, be the future of the company, it just feels right. After this match, it just felt more right for Kento to be the champion, and you still got to get this on Anzai sooner rather than later to have another second and long reign with it. But right now, I'm okay with Kento, especially with some of the stuff direction I think they might be going. So that's good. But the most notable thing of this match, I thought, was, my God, well, Kento debuted a new outfit and a new haircut. But my God, those boots, those are some shiny fucking boots. I could not stop looking at how shiny Kento's boots were. They're too shiny, maybe even to the point of distraction. But other than that, phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. No question. And obviously this, and given the sort of, you know, lack of really good matches in All Japan this year, this is a real nice way to end the year and build some more confidence going forward. And if you do think the company does, is at least things are looking up a bit, it's because of how great the main event on the biggest show of the year was, right? Which seems to be, once again, you know, where Noah loses out. New Japan, an unforgettable six-star match between Tanahashi and Okada. And then this incredible Miyahara versus Anzai match, which was the second best match, I think. I think it was better than Takeshita versus Tsuji, but that was also still very good. I'd go maybe like 4.5 on that, 4.25. So Noah is the odd man out. I mean, I thought the junior match was really good, and you could put it in your top 10 or top 5 in Japan for this sort of end of year, beginning of year area. And it's nice to see a Masuka on top, but it's simply not as important as what the, you know, main event of Budokan for them was. So just where Noah is sort of lacking right now in all of this, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, a good, and look, it's All Japan. You don't necessarily always have to work hard in the mid card, but you had 3 good matches at the top of the card, and that's makes a good show for All Japan. So we shift over January 2nd at Tokyo Korakuen Hall, their annual January 2nd show, in front of 1,240 fans, which, I mean, given that card, it's not bad, especially given that, you know, All Japan's had some issues drawing in Korakuen, especially when you don't have your big Triple Crown matches. So I would say that that is decent enough, especially for this card. So they started with the usual, everybody coming to the track with the track shoots out. And what I thought was interesting is, A, there was no President Fukuda. And I swear to God that I forgot to check last year's show, but Fukuda came out because I sort of noted that, unlike in the beginning of 2024, he did not get booed last year like he did, but I could be wrong. So no Fukuda. So he's keeping a low profile these days. Maybe that's because of Taishin, everything, handling of that. But guess the signees were of no surprise. We obviously had Shota Kofuji, but also Go Shiozaki, which is not completely surprising, and not, even though his comments upon leaving Noah was like, I've got a lot to do all over the place, or something along those lines. But hey, look, I think it's good for Go. I think it's good for All Japan. Maybe we'll see, as long as he doesn't bring in any other sketchy people. But to me, I think now that he signed a contract, he sort of took his wallops from Kento and June. I think he's gonna be a real player this year and finally get a push, and I think he's gonna be in the finals of the Champion Carnival, if not win it. That would be my prediction, I think. And of course, I want it on Anzai versus Go match. You know, and of course for Kofuji, I think he's still going to have a dual contract like Rising Hado did, although I don't know if Rising Hado still has a dual contract with Iheim Pro, but Kofuji does with Osaka style for now. But again, a good pickup. He's gotten himself over. Young, good-looking guy, which seems to be generally their trend in the junior division right now, with some fighting spirit. Not Taishin Nagao fighting spirit, admittedly, but you know, it is what it is. I know that All Japan held tryouts, I think, on the 20th or 21st. I think there were a couple of young guys at ringside that might be guys that they accepted, but I don't know for sure, and All Japan hasn't announced anything yet. So we'll see about that, right? Because they need to get some more young guys, some guys in the dojo for sure, no question about that. So we go to the matches. Okay, so we have Go Shiozaki defeating Shota Kofuji in 8:48 with the Go On Lariat. This was an initial opener between the two new signees to the company. You know, Shiozaki being the veteran and Kofuji the spunky youngster. So that was a good little feel-good opener to get those guys established. Well, they're already established, but you know what I mean. Then Baka no Jidai versus Hokuto Gan, Hokuto Omori, Kumarashi, and Cyrus defeated Hideki Suzuki, Kengo Mashimo, and Hikaru Sato in 6:39 with the diving senton from Arashi on Sato. Nondescript, not bad, not great, or anything like that. Another PWF World Junior Heavyweight Championship skirmish. Atsuki Aoyagi and Rising Hayato defeated Kurama and Masada in 12:33 with the horizontal cradle from Aoyagi. Kurama, and this is at which point people sort of freaking out, sort of thinking that Kurama might beat Atsuki, but we'll get more into that in a second. It was fine. I guess. Kento Miyahara, Jun Sato, Musashi, and Seki Yoshioka defeated Yuma Anzai, Shotaro Shino, Ryuki Honda, and Dan Tamara in 10 minutes with the shutdown German suplex hold from Miyahara on Tamara. Good, solid six-man, no question. Then Daisuke Sekimoto defeated Ryo Inoue in 10:40 with the Big Bang Catastrophe. This was great. Come on, this is awesome. You know, Inoue just coming in there, trying to prove his worth against the veteran and very big Sekimoto. Just what you want, kind of a match between the veteran and the young guy, especially a young guy like Inoue, who shows the fire and sort of insubordination that he can at times. So that was a lot of fun. Probably the best match on the show, actually. And then World Tag Team titles, Renai Abe and Talos defeated Zion and Odyssey in 17:40 with the double chokeslam that allowed Talos to pin Zion and the failed third defense of the champions. And the Titans of Calamity are the 103rd champions. And other than a table spot diving on the outside, this actually wasn't, I didn't think, even though this was shorter by like 6-7 minutes, I didn't think this was as good as the Real World Tag League Finals. I'm not exactly sure why. I can't quite put my finger on it, but it just felt, you know. Now, I heard from people that were there that it was enjoyable because, obviously, look, you got all these big guys going at it and everything like that. So that I can understand, a very different live experience. But I just didn't think it was as good. But, look, I think with Ayabai and Talos as the champions, they do open up more possibilities better than Zion and Odyssey, although I don't think Zion and Odyssey are going anywhere. Especially Zion. But, you know, to me, that was sort of like, you know, and the Titans are over, and I think you should go with them. And it has helped Ayabe a bit in the creative department. Taos is great. Taos is just awesome. So we had the New Year Battle Royal that Yuma Anzai won after pinning Shota Kofuji with the gimlet. You know, you've seen all these spots before, the comedy eliminations, everything like that. But it came down to, at one point, Kento Miyahara, Goshi Ozaki, Shota Kofuji, and Anzai. And so that was like giving Kofuji a bit of a rub, because then Go and Kento get tossed, and so Kofuji and Anzai had some good exchanges, and then of Anzai winning, so that was a nice little moment for Kofuji, though, showing that fire, almost winning and everything like that. Also on the show, it was announced we were getting a junior at Tag Festival 2026, and the winners of this will get a shot at Kato and Ishin's All Asia Tag Team titles, and the teams are Atsuki Aoyagi and Rising Hayato, Fuminori Abe and Sego Tachibana, Ryo Inoue and Mochizuki Jr., which is a really cool team, Mr. Saito Naruki Doi and Senior Saito, of course, Musashi and Soto Kofuji, and Seki Yoshioka and Yuya Susumu. Unfortunate. But that's really only the black mark on this tournament, I think. Because then you also have running of the tournament, Dan Tamron, Hikaru Saito, and Kota Sekifuda, Toshiyuki Sakuda, which I think is a nice team. So Sekifuda, I like it. Sekuda was a big Japan guy, but now I believe is freelance. So I think that's a very solid tournament other than Yuya Susumu. And it's just an 8-team single elimination tournament. And I hope the finals, and they could be, are Hayato and Aoyagi versus Inoue and Mochizuki Jr. I think those are my sort of dream finals. I mean, really, and who else could probably win this tournament other than Atsuki and Hayato, or like Dan and Hikaru? Like, it's not going to be Musashi and Shota, I don't think. Definitely not Yoshioka and Susumu, and not Sekifuda and Sakuda. So, yeah, that's sort of my prediction for things on that. So I'm going to go with Atsuki and Hayato, top seed, Tamara and Sato as my number two seed, and number three seed would be Inoue and Mochi Jr. I think that would be how it would go. And so this tournament is going to run over like a month, because it starts on the 15th at Korakuen Hall, and then the other with two more first round matches at Ota War Gym on the 23rd of February. And then the semifinals on March 15th at Korakuen. And then the finals at Esforta Arena, Hachioji Main Arena. Again, they're running there again, which is like the western edges of Tokyo on March 20th. And looking at the schedule, this is quite the ambitious schedule, which also makes sense why Kento's back as the champion, because you got Ota in February and you've got Esforta in March, and then you've got Korakuen Halls also in February and March near those other shows. And this is all in the Tokyo, right? As far as on that western edge of Tokyo. So honestly, you know, hey, maybe Anzai could do it, but to be the safest, Kento. So it would be interesting to see. But then again, who are the most appropriate challengers? But that's into the future. So we go to the next day on the 3rd at Corken Hall in front of 1,205 fans. So we're down by 35 fans. Again, not bad for the card, I would say. Yuko Miyamoto, Fuminori Abe, Seigo Tachibana, and Kota Sekafuda defeating Rising Hayato, Dan Tamura, Shoto Kofuji, and Mr. Sato Nuruki Doi in 11-11 with the Yankee Hammer from Tachibana on Kofuji. Very good, solid, hot opener. I think Sekafuda actually fits in quite well in All Japan, and hopefully he works more than just this junior tag tournament and maybe more Big Japan and All Japan collaborations again. We return to that, although who knows how they feel about them using their guys that have left, like Sekimoto, so I don't know. Then we had Hoko Tomori, Kumarashi, and Cyrus defeating Musashi, Sekio, Shioka, and Ryo Inoue in 9:39 with a reverse splash from Cyrus on Inoue. This was just to establish Hokuto Gun still as sort of killers. And look, I've been down on Cyrus, but I'm glad he's back in the past, and because I think he did improve and he's over, and I've learned to enjoy Cyrus. I still think he's best when he's a tag wrestler, though, like in straight 2-versus-2 tags. Havoc versus Baka no Jidai. Zion Odyssey and Goshi Ozaki defeated Hideki Suzuki, Kengo Mashimo, and Hikaru Sato in 9:24 with the diving headbutt from Zion Sato. Solid enough 6-man. Not much to write home about, though. Renai Abe, Talos, and Yuma Anzai defeated Kento Miyahara, Jun Saito, and Rookie Honda in 13:29 when Talos pinned Honda after double chokeslam. So what we're going to get now, though, is Talos challenged Kento, which is awesome. That's going to happen on January 25th in Chiba. I actually have reasonably decent hopes for this match because, as we said before, Talos knows how to play a giant. Kento's Kento. I mean, Kento can get a passable match out of guys like Abdullah Kobayashi and Taru, my God. So I have no doubt he'll get something out of Talos here. It's the question is how he gets the win. Is he going to like cradle him after like a blackout knee, or is he going to actually get him up for the shutdown? I don't know. But that'll be a lot of fun. No question about that. I'm looking forward to that. Then we've got Daisuke Sekimoto for the Gayor TV title, I should say. Daisuke Sekimoto defeated Shitaro Shino in 16:38 with the Big Bang Catastrophe to win the title. Poor Shino. I thought, you know, this was the perfect title for him to go somewhere and do something, right? For a bit. Give him some spot. Give him some direction. I know he's in Havoc, but still. But this is probably the price of it for doing business with Sekimoto as a regular. You got to get a title on him, give him something to do. Look, I can't hate it. It's Daisuke Sekimoto, who, yes, he's been around the block. He's showing wear and tear. He's suffered 2 major injuries, broke a leg and had a neck injury in 2025. Came back from that broken leg really fast. He's still good, though. He's still pretty darn good, right? And, you know, he's a valuable addition to the company these days when the roster's so thin. So, yeah, I totally hate it. I just hope they do something with this, you know. It's like I will never give up that one either. Nakajima come back, push a Shitaro Shino. Those are my demands. So, you know, we'll see where this goes, but it'll be good, I think. No question about that. And, you know, if Sekimoto can get Yuya Aoki in here, well, then not complain. And then for the main event, and of course, the match was awesome, I should say. Like, you know, just throwing each other around, German suplexes, lariats, you know, because Shino used the lariat occasionally, but he really busted it out here to sort of prove that he could sort of try to prove that he could hang with Sekimoto and everything. So really, Sekimoto was the big, you know, it's funny, just conversing a bit with some people and, you know, and just coming up with this idea that Sekimoto is like one of the best wrestlers of 2026 so far. And yeah, you know, yeah, after these couple of days, what can you say? Sekimoto was great on these two shows. So he's one of the leading wrestlers of 2026 so far. So let's see how long that can last. And then in the main event for the PWF World Junior Heavyweight title, Atsuki Aoyagi defeated Kurama in 2004 with the Firebird Splash to make his 4th defense. And everyone let out a sigh of relief after that finish where Atsuki pinned Kurama the day before. Now, here's the thing with this match. It started off okay, and then all of a sudden, like, Atsuki, like, roughed them up. Like, they brawled outside. He was throwing Kurama into, like, the barriers and those directional signs at the top of the stands and just stomping him in, like, and everything like that. Like, and they weren't doing junior stuff, per se. So Atsuki was, like, trying to prove something or something, prove a point or something. And then, like, Kurama gets upset and and frustrated, and he like rips off his mask and reveals the Asutaku Yano, and then the match sort of actually kicks into a high gear and decent little match, whatever. Then Atsuki wins. Just a weird match because they wanted to build that drama, and it was okay during the closing stretch. And then Kurama's basically cuts a tearful promo asking for forgiveness, and he says he's going to start as a young boy and everything like that in All Japan, although we'll say that he's not booked on any of these upcoming cards yet. So I don't know what's going on with that, but that's what it sounds like. So, you know, obviously your mileage may vary on what you think of that. It's a very weird, strange, and underhanded way to bring him back, even if he's going to show contrition. And he, you know, so it did not seem like Kurama was hated by the Japanese fans. Although, you know, on social media, it's not hard to find fans critical of this. I mean, I'm talking about Japanese fans, although it's not hard to find the opposite either. It was the international fan base that was much more unified in their opposition to him. So I don't know. Maybe the company realized this and had to do it, but whatever. Who knows what's going on? And look, trying to just gauge his work, you know, I mean, I think it's solid. I really like his drop kick, but I don't think it's like worth the PR disaster bringing him in or something like that. Not that it would be worth it if he was incredible, but even if it's just from a purely, how can this benefit us? You know, cutting out the morality, it doesn't make much sense either. I still suspect that Go had a hand in this and everything like that. But, you know, I mean, I think even if, how should I put this? Let's say Yano had never had, you know, what had happened to him. I still think that someone like Kofuji would be a better long-term prospect. No question about that. Not that, and I did enjoy Yano even in Noah before he left after his scandal and everything like that. But it's just, it's not worth it. It just brings a black cloud over the company. And, you know, it's very little to be gained from this. So it is what it is, you know. So, and I don't begrudge anyone that doesn't want to watch or anything at the company. I don't love it, but I can't say that I'm going to stop watching the company or anything like this. But I don't begrudge anyone that does, and it's not great, but it is what it is. And this is still the sleaziness of this business. And it was just a weird match because of disjointed roughing up, you know, okay, decent little finishing sequence, you know, not bad at all, but you know, and it's just like this. Also, you could just say that since they added the show on the 31st, it just makes these January 2nd and 3rd Korkins a lot less important feeling, right? And so, you know, you have these weaker cards. You know, without the 31st, you'd probably have stronger cards on the 2nd and the 3rd. You'd be coming close to selling out Korkin on both those shows. But look, at the end of the day, when you're doing 1,200 in Korkin plus 2,700 in Yoyogi, you're making more money than selling out just two Korkins. So, you know, I get it. They need the money. And so sort of looking ahead, obviously on the 26th, we've got Kento Miyahara versus Talos. On the 11th is the Fan Appreciation Day, New Year's Fan Appreciation Day at Shinjuku Face. And the card for that is Kumarashi versus Ryuki Honda, Daisuke Sekimoto, Hikaru Sato, and Seki Yoshioka versus Musashi, Kengo, Mishima, and Yuko Miyamoto. And I forgot to mention that Seki Yoshioka and Musashi are now brawled after one of their matches at Korakuen. So they don't like each other now, and so that's why they're not teaming in the junior tournament. We have Ren Ayabe. This is a four-way. Ren Ayabe versus Talos versus Cyrus versus Seigo Tachibana. Hokuto Omori, Atsuki Aoyagi, and Dan Tamura versus Jun Saito, Hideki Suzuki, and Shotaro Ashino. So you have all the factions scrambled there. And the main event is Kento Miyahara and Go Shiozaki versus Yuma Anzai and Rising Hado, which will be awesome. Originally, this was Go and Kento versus Ryo Inoue and Shota Kofuji, but All Japan announced, I think it was today or yesterday, or maybe today in Japan, but yesterday, my time. Inoue and Kofuji have influenza, so best wishes to them to get better, and hopefully, you know, they get back soon, hopefully, because I think the next show after that is on the 18th at Shinkiba, and I think we have a card for that now. Yeah, we do. So 18th in Shinkiba, we got Dan Tamura versus Kumarashi, Rising Hayato versus Shota Kofuji, Go Shiozaki, Shotaro Ishino versus Daisuke Sekimoto and Kengo Mishima. Banger. Jun Saito and Mr. Saito, Naruki Doi versus Hokuto Mori and Cyrus, Asuki Aoyagi, Musashi and Fuminori Abe versus Seki Yoshioka, Ryo Inoue and Mochizuki Jr. So that looks awesome. And then in the main event, we got a Triple Crown skirmish here with Kento, Miyahara, Hideki Suzuki, and Ryuki Honda versus Talos, Renai Abe, and Yuma Anzai. And I think that actually could be a lot of fun. And then we got the Chiba Mukari Messe International Exhibition Hall number 4 on the 28th or 25th. I'm sorry. So that show has the Musashi versus Sekiyoshi Yoka grudge match. We got Yuma Anzai, Rising Hayato, Shota Kofujin, Mr. Saturnuki Doi versus Roki Honda, Renai Abe, Ryo Inoue, and Ayato Yoshida making an appearance in All Japan for the first time in a while. There, we got Go Shiozaki and Shitaro Shino versus Daisuke Sakamoto and Kengo Mishinomo again. So exactly 1 week later, they have the same match run. So I would kind of maybe figure that these teams are going to trade wins, or maybe Go and Shitaro win both of them to become challengers, because I could see Go and Shitaro being challenging the Titans, actually, for the tag titles. We've got a junior heavyweight title match. I forgot to mention, Sego came out to challenge Asuki. So we got Tachibana versus Atsuki Oyagi, which, hey, that's going to be awesome. We got Jun Seto versus Cyrus, which, not going to lie, I'm looking forward to that. If they can keep it short and sweet, it could be a nice little match and exceed expectations, but we'll see. And then for the ever-prestigious AJPW TV certified six-man tag team titles, we got Hogo Tomori, Kuma Arashi, and Takashi defending against Hideki Suzuki, Dan Tamara, and Hikaru Sato. And then, of course, for the Triple Crown, we've got Kento Miyahara defending against Talos, and that will be so much fun. I'm pretty confident in that. So, yeah, that is what happened in Japan. Well, in sort of the promotions we covered from the sort of the end of the year to the beginning of 2026. Interesting. I would say All Japan looking up, but I would not say that they have pulled up like, say, New Japan has coming out of this. But Noah, not looking good. Just not looking good. And I don't know how. Well, I'm going to get through this year because I've gone through many bad in companies that have been worse, but it's just like, I don't know how long they can keep this up, because it feels like there is still, like, obviously whatever. And because, you know, I was quite critical very early on that this Team 2000X is going to overstay its welcome. It's going to get old very fast. And I was right about it from the very beginning. And it was like by March, I'm like, I'm over this. And it just continued. And it still felt like forward momentum, but it just feels like Noah is about to stall out. And leaning on, again, older talent, whether it's the Good Brothers and Naito, and who knows who else, other ex-LAJ guys will be joining him. So that's not good. But they have moved forward with Ozawa and Inamura, if flawed, but still, it's the young guys. And then they've got those three great rookies and Odashima, my God. So very interesting. You know, Noah's on that precipice where they could go either way, but right now it's not good. It's pointing downwards, so we'll see. But there's still, I could be saved quite easily. Wouldn't take much, just house cleaning and everything like that. So that's that. And we'll be back when Paul gets back, and he can debrief you all about his trip and look forward to that. And so we'll see you in a couple weeks, and enjoy all the wrestling out there. Bye.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.